Rich Kimble here with you, and time to talk a little baseball and see if there will be any in this coming season as we welcome in our friend Pete Abraham of the Boston Globe. Hello there, Pete.
Rich, how are you?
I'm doing very well, thanks. Well, did we learn anything today from the MLB press conference?
Well, I thought it was interesting that Rob Manfred didn't say spring training would be delayed, because that's what everybody thought he was going to say. And he proclaimed that the owners were ready to make a good proposal to the players on Saturday, and he had optimism about the season starting on time, and that it would be disastrous if it didn't. So maybe there's a little hope of this getting wrapped up at some point. It's probably not going to be soon, but they could probably get away with a month of spring training to be ready for the season. So I guess you can't give up hope yet.
Well, let's talk about that. These are different times. It's not like it was 40, 50 years ago when guys came to camp to get in shape. Most of them are working out throughout the year. Maybe the pitchers need that time to stretch out the arms, but how much spring training do they really need?
Manfred said he thought it was 4 weeks, and that sounds right to me. A lot of spring training is kind of wading through the organization, seeing what you have that you might be able to use during the season. And the guys who are going to be on the roster don't really start to play more than a few innings until maybe the last 2.5 weeks or so. So if you approached it a little differently, you could certainly get the guys who are going to be on the major league team ready pretty quickly. And all the guys who are pitchers, I'd be shocked if they're not already pitching, doing something, somewhere. Whether there's some guys in Florida who are working out at Chris Sale's old college already, I'm sure that's the case in Arizona and other places in Florida. I don't think any pitchers are going to show up having not thrown a ball at this point in the winter. So, like you said, it's a lot different than it used to be.
Why did the Players Association decide they didn't want to go the federal mediator route?
I think they look at that as something that's they've traditionally done over the years with their union, that they don't feel like mediation is the way to go. And it's not a binding thing anyway. I think they feel like, they can work it out with the owners without needing that. I don't know that there's necessarily a particular advantage that would go either way, but the players feel like, they've gotten to this point with the owners and that, why change it up now after, been 2 months of this dispute?
Now, I saw a couple comments from players that said basically what we're asking for is not that unreasonable. And as someone somewhat uninformed, but reading what I saw, I tended to agree they're not asking for the moon and the stars.
No, they're not. They're basically trying to, I think, do a couple of things to get younger players paid better than they are now, which makes sense because the game is kind of set up to take advantage of the younger player, and to try to make the game more competitive, for MLB to do something that would take away what teams are doing when they tank, that you wouldn't see, the Baltimore Orioles, determinedly losing for so many years and teams kind of taking that as an acceptable tactic, and that there should be, incentives built in that you or disincentives built in that you can't do that maybe there should be a draft lottery or the draft should be weighted somehow to keep teams from doing this. So I think what the players want to do by and large would probably make the game better, and the owners are trying feel like the system is just fine the way it is now because they've really benefited by it, and the more that they can stall and try to keep changes from happening, even if the players don't get all of what they want, the owners would still win because they like the system the way it is now.
What about arbitration? How far apart are they on that?
Yeah, that seems to be a case of when would you start arbitration? Would it be earlier in a player's career, which everybody seems to think that probably needs to happen at some point? The question is, how much earlier would it be? Would you have more Super 2 players? Would you have, some kind of a change in the arbitration system? And that seems to be necessary when you look at how, a player like, say, Rafael Devers gets, kind of taken advantage of during his most productive years. There ought to be some sort of way where he either get paid better until he becomes a free agent or become a free agent earlier. There's ways that they could do this. And meanwhile, the veteran player is losing on the back end because teams don't sign the older guys as much as they used to. So the idea used to be, well, you're going to take a little bit of a bath early in your career, but you're going to make up for it later. Now the players aren't making up for it later.
Do we know where John Henry stands on some of these issues?
No, he hasn't publicly said, and really none of the owners have. They've been pretty unified in not commenting on this and leaving it to the commissioner. You haven't really heard, you know, from what I've seen from owners anywhere about this. They've kept a unified front. And a lot of times I think the owners feel like if they can keep a unified front, eventually the players will crumble because the players have different agendas. They're in different parts of their careers. Some of the guys are superstars. Some of the guys are guys who are making, you know, closer to the league minimum, that they have different agendas, and eventually their union will crack and they'll want to make a deal. And if the owners stay unified, they'll end up getting the better of the deal. So, yeah, you don't see anything. The owners don't speak out very much about this at all.
We're talking with Pete Abraham of the Boston Globe here on Downtown. If you had to guess, what concessions do you think we might see from the owners when they come up with their proposal that I guess they'll present on Saturday?
Yeah, I would imagine it would be making the CBT a higher threshold to, you know, increase how much money the higher-end teams would want to spend, maybe cutting back on what the penalties would be for overspending, figuring out a way for players to get either into arbitration earlier, or guys who reach certain thresholds would get, you know, there might be some sort of like a central fund that would pay them more based on different things. I hope it wouldn't be for winning awards, because that puts the writers in a pretty tricky position. If you're covering a team where a guy could win an award and be compensated for that, you know, that's kind of puts writers in a pretty bad spot. So I think there's ways that they can concede without giving up what they feel like the biggest advantages are they have.
So in terms of the timeline, Pete, what's the window? How late can they go before the start of the regular season is in jeopardy?
Well, I would think if you said, okay, well, they need to be on the field having spring training by March 1st, that would mean they would need some kind of agreement probably 7 to 10 days earlier than that so that they could complete all of the business that they haven't had a chance to complete during the off season. There's still a whole mess, you know, dozens of players who haven't gone through arbitration. They haven't had the Rule 5 draft. There's a lot of free agents out there, including some very prominent guys, you know, Carlos Correa and Clayton Kershaw. There's a lot of relievers who still haven't signed. Oakland is believed to want to make trades. The Reds may want to make trades. The Mets may want to make trades. So there's a lot of business to be done. And if you risk kind of not having that period where teams can do that, you would have a situation where you would have players in spring training who would know they were going to be traded. You would have rosters kind of flipping during spring training, which is not something the managers want. So I think that, you know, we're maybe, you know, 2 weeks, maybe a week, you know, 10 days away from kind of that window starting to close. But, you know, you would like to think that they could come up with something, you know, between now and then.
Well, and if they do, as you pointed out, it's likely to get crazy. There could be a flurry of activities here. And you wrote about your conversation with Sam Kennedy, and he says, as I'm sure other teams do, that, well, they're ready. Once it's good to go, they are ready to jump right in.
Yeah, I mean, the front offices, and there's been a media blackout with all the general managers and the assistant general managers. But in talking to people on the side, you know, they're kicking around scenarios and talking about players they like, and they can't talk to other teams or their players. But, you know, I'm sure, you know, Chaim Bloom and his guys are not just, you know, didn't go on vacation. They're talking about things that they might want to do. And the second those guys get the go-ahead, I'm sure there's a lot of plans that are on paper that they'd like to bring into action. And, you know, the Red Sox right now probably need to sign two or three relievers to complete their bullpen. They need a right-handed bat. They have some other things that they might want to figure out. So, you know, once that green light goes on, it's going to be a pretty wild time in baseball. And it'll be a fun time because people will be talking about baseball stuff instead of CBA stuff.
Yeah. Is that the bullpen the top priority for them once they can make moves?
I think so. And you look at their rotation, you know, they've got Rich Hill, they've got Chris Sale, they've got Nate Eovaldi, they've got some pieces in Tanner Houck and Garrett Whitlock. But, you know, it's clearly a rotation where you're going to need guys in the sixth, seventh, and eighth innings to fill in that, you know, there's not too many, you know, they're not going to lean on Chris Sale for 200 innings or Rich Hill for 200 innings. Whitlock and Houck have never been, you know, big league starters over the course of the season. The only two guys that kind of look like they could be workhorses would be Eovaldi and Pivetta. So they will need a strong bullpen. They'll need a bullpen with some versatility. They have a few guys around now, but yeah, they need to supplement that. That would seem to be the most important thing for the Sox right now.
So are your travel plans on hold while we wait for things to settle out?
You know, I was saying to my dad about a couple days ago, this is the first time in about 20 years that I haven't been in Florida at this point, you know, already kind of you know, watching guys come into spring training and getting ready for the season. And it feels strange, you know, kind of still being here. I'm usually packed up and ready to go and probably would have left a couple days ago. So it's been nice to be around my family a little bit more. But, yeah, I'd like to get back to work and get back to watching baseball.
Speaking of your dad, I love the picture you posted on social media the other day about the old football pennants that your dad got.
Yeah, he was a Patriots season ticket holder for a long time, going back to when he was in college when they first started the team. And as Patriots fans will remember, when they played at the old Foxborough Stadium, that was a pretty wild place. And my mom deemed I was too young to go to the game. And so, you know, my dad would go off with my uncles and his friends and, you know, being a Patriots fan, I would watch the game on TV, and then he would come back, and my reward was I would get a pennant every week when he came back from a game. So he would it was kind of funny because obviously the first one I got was a Patriots pennant, and then he would every week I would say, okay, well, I need a San Diego Chargers, and he would have to go searching around the stadium to find a particular team that I didn't have already. So over the years, those have kicked around at different apartments and in my parents' basement, and my mom a couple months ago said, hey, listen, you need to take these off our hands. And she gave me all my old pennants back.
I love that. And it reminded me of when I was a kid, when we would go to Fenway, my go-to souvenir I wanted to get was always the replica batting helmets. And I've still got a handful of those, including my prized possession, an old Washington Senators helmet.
Well, you know, it's funny that the souvenir store across the street from Gate D was the only back, you know, long ago when we were kids, that was the only place you could find anything other than Red Sox merchandise.
Right.
You could buy an Oakland A's hat there or a Washington Center, whatever it was. And nowadays, you can get those things anywhere you want. But back then, if you wanted to get something that didn't have a Red Sox logo, that was the only place to go.
That's right. It was great. Pete Abraham, the Boston Globe. Pete, always good talk with you. Thanks for being with us this afternoon. Hopefully, we can get this thing resolved and get you down south where you belong.
Well, I hope the next time we talk, I'm in Florida, Rich. That would be a good sign.
Fingers crossed. Thanks a lot, Pete.
Thanks, Rich.
Pete Abraham of the Globe with us here on Downtown Talking Baseball.